Chapter 19, The Lie of Natural Selection.
Although he was a murderer of millions and master of destruction, he did not come into the world that way. On the evening of April 20, 1889, a boy was born in a small town in Austria. He was the son of a customs official named Alois and his third wife named Clara. Initially his father had taken his mother's name, Schickel Gruber, but changed it in 1876. Believe it or not, this young boy regularly attended church services and even sang in the local choir. And although he grew up with a poor record at school and left before completing, he still had an ambition to become an artist or architect. So, to fulfill his dream, he moved to Vienna in 1909, where the Academy of Arts was located. But to his own surprise, he failed to get admission and within a year was living in homeless shelters and eating at charity soup kitchens. So from here he went to Munich and volunteered for service in the army when World War I started in 1914. It was here that he was twice decorated for bravery and rose to the rank of corporal. Then in 1920, he joined the National Socialist Workers' Party and soon became the leader mostly because of his powerful speaking ability. And by 1932, his party became the strongest party so that by 1934, this man had total control of his country. But his desire for domination didn't stop there. By 1939 he invaded Poland, which triggered World War II. And everything seemed to be going his way until in December 1941 when he assumed personal command of war strategy, which quickly led to disaster. By July 1944, the military situation was so desperate that a group of his own people tried to assassinate him but failed. And even though the war was now hopelessly lost by early 1945, this man still insisted that his people fight to the death. But shortly thereafter, he committed suicide in an underground bunker, leaving behind a legacy of one of the most dreadful tyrannies of modern times, with more than 11 million people being killed, 6 million of those in gas chambers. In fact, they were exterminated not just for who they were but for what they were. Of course, I'm talking about the reign of Adolf Hitler.
Now, how many of you guys have ever heard about Adolf Hitler and the horrible things he did? Yeah, he's known throughout the world, right? But my point is this. What most of us don't know about Hitler is the reason why he slaughtered millions of people. And folks, believe it or not, his justification came from evolutionary teachings. You see, if Hitler was going to create his master race, then he had to get rid of the lower races, right? And folks, it is now known that the reason why he specifically started killing the Jews first was because they were last on his evolutionary scale. Don't believe me? Folks, let's take a look at what's been called Hitler's hit list and you tell me if it doesn't reek of evolutionary teaching.
Species blood mixture. Nordic, blonde, blue-eyed, close to pure Aryan. Germanic, brown hair, blue-eyed or less desirable, brown-eyed, predominantly Aryan. Mediterranean, white but swarthy, slight Aryan preponderance. Slavic, white but degenerate bone structure, close to Aryan, half ape. Oriental, slight ape preponderance. Black African, predominantly ape. Jewish, fiendish skull, close to pure ape.
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say evolutionary teachings are not only a big hoax as we've been seeing, but I'd say they also lead to a big Holocaust. How about you? And gee, folks, I guess that's why we need to continue in our study called, The Witness of Creation. And so far, we've seen the first evidences of creation that God has left behind, showing us that He's not just real, but that we really can have a personal intimate relationship with Him, the Creator of the universe, where the evidences of an intelligent creation from very the hand of Almighty God, as opposed to blind chance exploding from some sort of primeval blob, and then a young creation, as opposed to the long-age fairy tale time of evolution. And in the last two chapters we saw how the second evidence was a special creation. And so far, we've not only seen the supposed ape-man evolution as a bunch of baloney, but in the last chapter we saw the supposed animal evolution is also a bunch of baloney. Why? Well, hey, thanks for asking. Because the two best examples they've come up with, the horse and whale evolution, have some serious problems. For instance, the supposed horse evolution had the problems of existence, the ancient problem, the genetic problem, the inconsistency problem, the fossil problem, the size problem, and even the admission problem. Then, if that wasn't bad enough, the supposed whale evolution had a version problem, a design problem, a fossil problem, a vestigial problem, an imagination and picture problem, and they too had an admission problem. Therefore, we concluded that if this is the best they can come up with for supposed animal evolution, then any kind of animal evolution is a bunch of baloney. But you might be thinking, okay, so maybe this supposed slow gradual evolution of people and animals is a bunch of baloney. But what about all the other supposed mechanisms they come up with, like natural selection? Well, hey, great question. But before we look at that, let's once again get reacquainted with the biblical answer for the existence of animals in the remains we find.
Genesis 6:1-8. When men began to increase in number on the earth and daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were beautiful, and they married any of them they chose. Then the Lord said, My spirit will not contend with man forever, for he is mortal, his days will be 120 years. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God went to the daughters of men and had children by them. They were the heroes of old, men of renown. The Lord saw how great man's wickedness on the earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time. The Lord was grieved that he had made man on the earth, and his heart was filled with pain. So, the Lord said, I will wipe mankind, whom I have created, from the face of the earth, men and animals, and creatures that move along the ground, and birds of the air, for I am grieved that I have made them. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord.
Now folks, according to our text, the Bible is clear. Out of judgment and grief over mankind's continual wickedness, God not only caused a literal worldwide flood, but he caused it on whom? On the men and animals that he what? That he made, right? But once again, what does evolution teach? Do they say that God's the one who made animals on the earth? Are you kidding? They say it was natural selection that gave them birth, right? Therefore, I'd say we better take a look at not just the scriptural evidence but the scientific evidence of this supposed natural selection thing and see who's telling the truth, how about you? And to help us do that, let's first take a refresher course in how this natural selection thing is supposed to work.
Natural selection, also known as the survival of the fittest, is an idea that was popularized by Charles Darwin. He proposed it as a major driving force behind evolutionary change. However, Darwin actually didn't come up with the idea. He got it from a man named Alfred Wallace, who himself was a spiritualist and a Marxist, who said the idea of survival of the fittest came to him while he was suffering from a fever in Southeast Asia. Afterwards, Wallace wrote back to England, saying that the idea came as an inspiration to him, and that it must be the cause of evolution. It was after this that Charles Darwin stole the idea and published it as his own. Here's how this feverish idea is supposed to work. Those organisms which are best suited to their environment, that is the strongest ones, are the ones most likely to survive and leave behind descendants, hence survival of the fittest. Therefore, these stronger survivors are said to have a greater chance of passing on their more favorable genes increasingly over generation to generation, while the less fitted creatures don't because they lose the struggle to survive over the stronger ones and die or disappear altogether. Therefore, it is this natural process of nature and this selection process of stronger survivors that Darwin believed could give rise to totally new traits and totally new creatures indefinitely. In fact, so much was this stolen and feverish idea popularized that Sir Julian Huxley boldly stated, "So far as we know, natural selection is the only effective agency of evolution."
Now folks, how many of you ever heard about or were taught this natural selection thing? Of course it's commonplace, right? But the point is this. Is it really true? Did natural selection really give birth to all the animals we see today? I don't think so. How do I know? Because the first reason why we know God created the animals is because natural selection is a lie. Folks, believe it or not, natural selection is yet another evolutionary hoax. But you might be thinking, well gee, Pastor Billy, pretty bold to call it a lie. I mean, how do you know? Well hey, thanks for asking. The first reason why we know natural selection is a lie is because the process doesn't even work. People, we're going to take a look at some very serious problems with this natural selection thing, and you tell me if we haven't been lied to, yet again.
The problem of pre-existing traits. Natural selection only selects, if you will, traits that already exist within a given creature. Therefore, it does not and cannot produce new genetic information needed for any new organs. And because of this, it cannot lead to the formation of a new kind of species.
The problem of DNA. The DNA is a wall which evolution cannot pass across, because the DNA code causes a creature to be born like its parents. This is what is called the Mendelian laws of heredity. Now, even though the DNA does allow a certain range of variation, the code locks each species into a certain pattern from which it cannot escape. Therefore, DNA is a built-in barrier, keeping species from becoming new kinds of creatures altogether.
The problem: neutral traits. There are some traits that are neutral, or in other words, they give no benefit to their owner. The logical question is, how could neutral traits have evolved by natural selection if they offered no selective advantage? By definition, only the strongest or positive traits should survive.
The problem of survival of the fittest. The very idea of a survival of the fittest means that creatures who are not fit enough to survive are eliminated. For instance, if a creature is born with features that are too far from the norm, it will not be fit, and it will therefore die. However, this eliminates all extremes, and thereby eliminates any hope for evolution to take place. In fact, it would actually make sure the species returns closer to its original pattern, which is precisely what we see in wild plants and animals. All tend to return to the normal. Therefore, survival of the fittest produces the opposite of evolution by acting as a conserving force, assuring that the species stays the same.
The problem of randomness. Not only is natural selection supposed to have produced everything, the process is said to be entirely random. However, all about us we see not randomness, but purpose and design in everything. The plant is given roots to extract water and minerals, and leaves to process sunlight and water and to produce sugar. Then the animal is given legs, eyes, ears, and marvelous internal organs, all with incredible purpose. Therefore, since nothing is random or haphazard, the so-called random process of natural selection could never have produced all the non-random or designed structures we see in nature.
The problem of limitations. Even if natural selection could provide variations in a creature, variations in creatures have built-in limitation. For instance, farmers have been trying for years and years to breed bigger pigs, but they will never get one as big as a semi, will they? Or some insects become resistant to pesticides, but will they ever become resistant to a brick? Therefore, these built-in limitations keeps things from becoming a totally new kind of creature.
The problem of logic. Again, while we may see many variations within various plants and animal species, they are still the same kind of plant or animal. Therefore, the production of new creatures via natural selection not only never occurs, it's logically impossible. For instance, how about almonds? First, they are grown, then harvested, hulled, sorted, graded, diced, sliced, slivered, crosscut, split, cubed, chopped, flaked, smoked, roasted, blanched, flavored, pounded into paste, tested and retested. And then they are jarred, foil-wrapped, canned, bagged, boxed, palletized, barcoded and stored. Now the question is, how long would this selection process take to turn those almonds into an albatross? Answer: never. This selection process of almonds can only produce almonds. Or how about rice? First, rice is grown, then harvested, and shipped to a processing plant where it will be cleaned, husked and separated with its thickness graded. Then it will then be whitened, polished, sifted, and its length measured. Then it's sorted based on color, and then sent to be packaged. So, the question is, how long would this selection process take to turn rice into a rhinoceros? Answer: never. This selection process of rice can only produce rice. Or how about cattle? There are well over 200 different breeds of cattle in the world, such as the Angus, Belted Galloway, Charolais, Guernsey, Hereford, Holstein, Jersey, Longhorn, and the Simmental. Question: how long would it take to breed these different cattle together before they turned into chickens? Answer: never. This selection process of breeding cattle can only produce cattle. And just in case you haven't got it yet, how about dogs? There are about 250 different breeds of dogs in the world, such as the Akita, Boxer, Dachshund, Greyhound, Mastiff, Pekingese, St. Bernard, Whippet, and the Terrier. So, the question is, how long would it take to breed those different kinds of dogs together before they turned into a dolphin? Answer: never. This selection process of breeding dogs can only produce dogs. Therefore, natural selection cannot by nature produce any kind of new creature.
Now, folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say based on the problems of the process of natural selection, there's no way it could ever create a new kind of animal. Therefore, I'd say natural selection is a bunch of baloney. How about you? Oh, but that's not all. The second reason we know natural selection is a lie is that the examples don't even work. People, we're going to look at some of the best examples the evolutionists have come up with for supposed proof of natural selection, and you tell me if somebody doesn't have the old Pinocchio syndrome.
Galapagos finches. During Charles Darwin's 5-year voyage on the HMS Beagle, he visited the Galapagos Islands in the Pacific. And it was here that he found a group of finches and noticed that there were about 13 varieties of these finches with different sizes and beak types. And even though Darwin never had a day of science training in school, when he saw those variety of finches, he decided that each was a different type of bird, showing that his evolution theory had occurred. However, the only thing this really showed was that variations can and do occur within a created kind. There was no new genetic information added to these finches, and no new traits or characteristics had appeared, and besides, they were still finches. They never became a spider, chicken, or weasel. In fact, one scientist who carefully examined the collection said, the whole collection had an appearance of general uniformity. Were it not for the historical importance of these finches as one of the pillars of evidence for evolution, I doubt if much attention would be given them.
Flies and bacteria. Some evolutionists point to flies and bacteria that are resistant to DDT and antibiotics as a proof of evolution in action. However, once again, this is only variation and not the upward changes needed for a new kind of creature altogether. And just as in the previous case, no new information was added. Furthermore, when all was said and done, the bacteria remained bacteria, and the flies remained flies. They didn't turn into cucumbers, cats, or cows.
Peppered moth. One of the most popular supposed proofs of evolution, especially in the area of natural selection, is the alleged evolution of the peppered moth. It is a moth species in England that has a light speckled variety and a dark coloured variety. And as the story goes, before 1850, most peppered moths were of the light coloured variety, but supposedly due to the pollution in the area caused by the Industrial Revolution, the black ones started to become dominant because the black soot from the pollution camouflaged them, and the birds ate the more visible light coloured moths. But when anti-pollution laws began to be enforced years later, the light variety became predominant again, because the black ones now lost their camouflage, and hence got eaten by the birds again. The whole idea was brought forth by a man named H.V. Kettlewell, and at first his theory and experiments seemed very straightforward. In fact, photographs were taken of the dark and light moths resting on tree trunks during the daytime, with birds picking off and eating the less camouflaged ones. In fact, Kettlewell described it as the most striking evolutionary change ever actually witnessed in any organism. And British geneticist P.M. Shepherd called it the most spectacular evolutionary change ever witnessed and recorded by man. Yes, it was natural selection in action, or was it? When the supposed evidence was checked out by others, it was actually yet another evolutionary hoax. First of all, after 25 years, only 2 of these moths were seen in their natural habitat. Then it was discovered that peppered moths don't even rest on tree trunks in the daytime like the pictures showed. Rather, they are night flyers and hide under leaves in treetops. So, to get the desired pictures, Kettlewell and others attracted the moths into traps in the forest with light or by releasing female pheromones. Then they took dead moths or ones they raised in the laboratory and faked the photographs by pinning or gluing the moths to the trees. In fact, some of the live moths they raised in the lab were so sluggish that they had to warm them up on their car hood to liven them up to get the birds to eat them. Furthermore, University of Massachusetts biologist Theodore Sargent, who helped glue the moths onto the trees for a Nova documentary, admitted that textbooks and films have featured a lot of fraudulent photographs. And then evolutionist Jerry Coyne admitted that the peppered moth story, which was the prize horse in our stable, must now be discarded, and said, "My own reaction resembles the dismay attending my discovery, at the age of six, that it was my father, and not Santa, who brought the presents on Christmas Eve." And even though the peppered moth story is a complete hoax, many of the writers and textbook publishers still use these same images today, all the while knowing it's false. But remember, even if this whole peppered moth story was true, and it's not, it still wouldn't prove evolution. Dark moths and light moths have always been around, and no matter what color the moth is, it's still a moth, not a mouse, a man, or a moose.
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say based on the problems with these so-called examples of natural selection, there's no way it could ever create a new kind of animal. How about you? In fact, I'd say it's a bunch of baloney. How about you? Oh, but that's not all. The third reason we know natural selection is a lie is because that don't even work. Now folks, I don't know if you've started to see a pattern over the last several chapters, but how many of you have noticed that every single time the evolutionists admit the mechanisms of evolution don't even work? Well gee, does anybody want to take a guess if the same is true for natural selection? Yes? Wow. You guys are on the ball. But don't take my word for it. Let's listen to theirs.
Number 1. Science Digest, January 1961 said, out of 120,000 fertilized eggs of the green frog, only 2 individuals survived. Are we to conclude that these 2 frogs out of 120,000 were selected by nature because they were the fittest ones? Or rather that natural selection is nothing but blind mortality which selects nothing at all? Number 2. G. Simpson, The Major Features of Evolution, wrote, it might be argued that the theory of natural selection is quite unsubstantiated and has status only as a speculation. Number 3. Encyclopedia Britannica, quoting philosopher Carl Hempel, said, the theory of natural selection is not really an explanation of organic evolution at all, not even a bad one. Number 4. Tom Bethel, Darwin's Mistake, Harper's Magazine said, Darwin made a mistake sufficiently serious to undermine his theory. And that mistake has only recently been recognized as such. One organism may indeed be fitter than another, but this, of course, is not something which helps create the organism. It is clear, I think, that there was something very, very wrong with such an idea. As I see it, the conclusion is pretty staggering. Darwin's theory, I believe, is on the verge of collapse. Number 5. Niles Eldridge, curator of paleontology at the American Museum of Natural History, said, natural selection per se does not work to create new species. Number 6. Charles Darwin, The Descent of Man, Volume 1 said, I admit that in the earlier editions of my Origin of Species I probably attributed too much to the action of natural descent of the survival of the fittest.
Now folks, I don't know about you, but based on the quotes of the evolutionists themselves, I'd say natural selection is a bunch of baloney. How about you? Oh, but that's still not all. The fourth reason we know natural selection is a lie, and a deadly one, is because the belief doesn't even work. People, as we alluded to at the beginning of this chapter, it was Hitler's belief in evolution that gave him the excuse to not only try to conquer the world, but to slaughter millions of people, right? And just in case that's still a hard cookie for some of you to swallow, don't take my word for it, let's listen to the man and people themselves. What most people don't realize is that the belief of natural selection's survival of the fittest reached its logical conclusion with Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party. In fact, Hitler himself was not only an evolutionist, but even his famous book Mein Kampf, which means My Struggle, clearly shows this. The whole theme was about a struggle between races where the Aryan race was charged to dominate and rule the world. For instance, listen to these quotes.
Number 1. R. Milner, Encyclopedia of Evolution said, during the 1930s, Adolf Hitler believed he was carrying Darwinism forward with his doctrine that undesirable individuals and inferior races must be eliminated in the creation of the new order dominated by Germany's master race. German intellectuals believed natural selection was a law of nature impelling them to bloody struggle for domination. Their political and military textbooks promoted Darwin's theories as the scientific basis of a quest for world conquest, with the full backing of German scientists and professors of biology. Number 2. Robert Clark, Darwin, before and after said, "One need not read far in Hitler's Mein Kampf to find that evolution likewise influenced him and his views on the master race, genocide, human breeding experiments, etc." Number 3. Armelner, Encyclopedia of Evolution said, "The position in Germany was that man must conform to nature's processes, no matter how ruthless. The fittest must never stand in the way of the law of evolutionary progress." In its extreme form, that social view was used in Nazi Germany to justify sterilization and mass murder of the unfit, incompetent, inferior races. Number 4. Edward Simon, Another Side to the Evolution Problem said, "I cannot deny that the theory of evolution, and the atheism it engendered, led to the moral climate that made a Holocaust possible." Number 5. And Hitler himself said this, "I regard Christianity as the most fatal, seductive lie that has ever existed. He who would live must fight. He who does not wish to fight in this world where permanent struggle is the law of life, has not the right to exist." The question we must ask ourselves is this: would Hitler have acted the way he did if he were a creationist?
Now folks, my whole point in bringing that up is this. It's obvious that what you believe determines how you behave, right? Therefore, a belief in natural selection is not only dumb, it's deadly. How about you? And keep in mind folks, the whole thing is based on a lie. But you might be thinking, okay, so maybe the supposed evolution of man and animals is a bunch of baloney, and even this thing called natural selection is a bunch of baloney. But what about all the other supposed mechanisms they come up with for evolution? You know, like embryology and mutations and vestigial organs and all that other stuff as to how life supposedly evolved. Well, hey, great question. I guess that's why we'll look at that in the next chapter.